Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Showcase Studio right here on Michigan Avenue, and we are here until 5 a.m. It's Wildcard Wednesday. You get your requests in, Wildcard Wednesday. That's any artist, any song, anything. Get them in now, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Yesterday was Siblings Day, so we're going to talk about famous siblings. Famous sibling in entertainment and in history as well. So that's coming up as well. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. You can also check us out on Twitter at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. So you heard that was a Night Flight from the album Physical Graffiti by Led Zeppelin. And that was rehearsal audio from Great Moments in Vinyl. Great Moments in Vinyl, you guys, we've had them on many times. Lindsey Cochran organizes it, gets some of the best musicians in Chicago, and they pay tribute to different bands and artists by performing full albums, and then in between those songs, they tell stories, and they're coming up this Saturday. They'll be paying tribute to Led Zeppelin's Physical Graffiti, a personal favorite of mine. It's at Martyrs at 3855 North Lincoln Avenue. You can check out greatmomentsinvinyl.com for more. First, let's welcome Lindsey Cochran back to the show. Lindsey, how are you?
I'm very good. Good morning to you. Hey, that's such a trip to hear you play that little hook from Night Flight, because I mean, we just recorded that like 2 or 3 hours ago on an iPhone. So, wow.
Well, it sounded good.
Thank you,
sir. It sounded real good. I love Physical Graffiti. We can get to that in a second. But first of all, give everybody the background on Great Moments in Vinyl, what the experience is.
Well, the idea is that we give people the music in a new way. We give it back to you in a new way by telling stories about the songs. So suddenly, it illuminates the songs. It reveals things about the songs you didn't know, or what the musicians were going through, or what was on their mind at the time. And suddenly, you come away feeling like you really spent some time with this music in a new way. You know, it was great to immerse yourself in an album when it first came out. You played it all the time, but you didn't know some of the stuff that was going on. Well, we fill you in.
Yeah, and then and on top of that, you get some incredible musicians to play with you, and you got a great lineup for this one. I want to get into it, but one of the guys that you have with you is Scott Tipping. How'd you meet up with Scott, Lindsey?
We had a Led Zeppelin show at the end of last year, and I needed one of my regular guitarists. Richard Pettengill wasn't available. He was out of town doing something in Vegas, I think it was, and so we put the word out. And Scott had been on the radar before. I don't know all the bands that he works with. I know he's sometimes worked with Terrapin Flyer. He had a Traffic cover band that he's been a part of, tours with Peter Himmelman, and does some other things like that. Scott, I'll have to have him fill you in on the other details. But I just knew that this guy was good, and we got to meet with him and work with him, and then I knew from experience that he was good. I was just blown away.
All right, well, let's welcome him to the show. First time on my show as well, Scott Tipping. Hi, Scott. How are you, man?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure. Let's get your background. You've been playing guitar for how long? You've been playing guitar?
I don't remember. ever since I was a kid, my dad is a guitar player, so guitar has always been on my mind, and probably around second or fourth grade, somewhere in early grade school, he started showing me some chords and things like that. And I was lucky because he played in like a kind of a lounge band, rock band. And like early on, those guys would get me to sit in. And then there were some other people that he knew or like people we knew that had restaurants and bars, and like they would get me up to play at an early age. So it's always been around,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, well, yeah. That's great, and so you've been in. Can you name all the bands you've been in, Scott, or is that also a blur because there's been so many?
It's a blur, but I mean, I played. I was a member of the Mighty Blue Kings. I played with Backyard Tire Fire. I played in Cornmeal. As Lindsey pointed out, I currently play with Peter Himmelman. Mm. I'm lucky. I get to do a lot of really great things.
Yeah, well, that's.
Yeah,
that's really great, and I see that you've also, you know, shared the stage with people like Buddy Guy and Los Lobos, ZZ Top. That's pretty amazing.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I've been really lucky. I've got to play with and meet like a lot of actual heroes. You never take it for granted. It's been a really beautiful thing to get to share the stage with people or open for people that you have been listening to since you were a kid. You know?
Yeah, that's really great. Can you remember the first? The first like guitar hero of yours? Do you have one or two? What are some? Who are some of your favorite guitar heroes?
Really early on, J. Jimmy Page was one of them, which is why this physical graffiti thing is such a luxury. George Harrison, Michael Bloomfield, Magic Sam, Stevie Ray Vaughan, those were like really early people for me. You know, Peter Green, you know, I was lucky because not only my father, but my dad's side of the family and my mom's side of the family listened to a lot of great music, and people gave me a lot of great records early on. So, like, I was probably the only kid in kindergarten that knew Paul Butterfield and Mike Bloomfield and stuff like that, you know?
I bet you were the only kid in kindergarten to know that, yeah.
Totally,
yeah,
totally.
That's really great.
Yeah.
That's really great. And so, then you met up with Lindsay, and you also, you teach at the Wire in Berwyn. Tell me about that.
Yes. I teach private guitar lessons out there. They have a thing. They have a bunch of really great teachers and stuff like that. And I have a bunch of really good students, you know, like they're always, Wire does a really great job. Chris and John and, John, both two Johns. Yeah, that's a fun thing. I actually really like getting to teach because what's exciting to me is when I see music get exciting to somebody else.
Yeah.
So, like, there's a handful of students right now that are just on that cusp of starting to learn things, and you can see they can't wait to go home and practice it. They can't wait to come back and show me I can do this, you know? That continues to make me want to try harder and play better and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's got to be rewarding, right?
It is.
Yeah.
It's incredibly rewarding.
Are you from Chicago, Scott, originally?
I grew up in Wheaton.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I've always been around. I mean, most of where I play is Chicago. But, yeah, I grew up in the burbs.
All right, great. And are you excited about this gig on Saturday, I bet?
I'm super excited. You know, as Lindsay said, we did, I had known of Great Moments in Vinyl for a while. I was always secretly hoping to get the call. So Lindsay called me for these two Zeppelin records, 3 and 4, and Wire. And not only was it a great experience, I really enjoy his program. I like how we get to, as he said, experience the record with information and music. It's a kind of multifaceted way to experience the records again. But also, I really liked him and his musicianship and the way he runs the band and his general sense of positivity. So we hit it off right away, and I'm very fortunate that he's called me to do some other projects.
Well, congratulations. I'm happy that you're hooking up with him. And Lindsay, you are a very cool guy and a very positive guy, and it's always a pleasure to be around you. So
you have to post somewhere that I'm now blushing.
Okay, Lindsay, but before we get to, you got some stories about Zeppelin and about physical graffiti.
Yeah.
You guys have been really busy lately at Great Moments and Vinyl, gigging everywhere and doing all kinds of stuff. The last time you were on with us was in January when you got right before you guys did the Hendrix gig.
Yeah,
and then
one of the strategies to try to take the show to more than just one location. So, I mean, my band members have said that to me. I mean, good gosh, we've learned all this music and we're just playing it once.
Yeah.
So I tried to find other places to put the shows, and so we did take the Hendrix show not only to Wire, but also started at Martyrs and then took it out to Wire. And then there's a Rolling Stone show that we took a couple of venues out to the Joliet Area Historical Museum. And these places are very kind and want to have us come back and play some more. So I don't want to say no.
I don't blame you, man. I love that logic. Hey, we learned all this new music. What are we just going to play it once? I love that. I think that's
right.
It's great.
Well, one of your coworkers, Bob Kessler, plays harmonica with us.
Yeah.
From time to time, and he made the observation that the only downside with what we've been doing, just doing one show, is it's like every Great Moments in Vinyl performance then is like the first night of the tour. You know, you don't get the other nights to perfect what you're doing on stage.
Right.
And I do think we do get better over time, and we get more comfortable with it, and it's less about trying to remember how the song goes and more about just enjoying the experience of being up there. So,
yeah. And
the better.
So in addition to yourself, you'll be playing bass and you'll be telling stories. Scott, you're going to be playing acoustic and electric guitar. Give us the other
singing.
And singing. Okay. And give us the other the other players, Lindsay. Who else is in the lineup for Saturday night for Zeppelin?
Well, one person that's stepping into Robert Plant's shoes in a big way is Judith Wyrick, whom you've met once before. I believe she came on when we were doing, I can't remember if it was Janis Joplin or the Sinead O'Connor show or maybe another Led Zeppelin show. But Judith is going to be singing a lot of the lead on the songs. Alton Smith, whom you've met,
yep,
plays some incredible keyboards and has sung some Zeppelin with us, but on this occasion he's just going to be doing some harmonies, but a lot of keyboard work. Philip Roach, I should have Scott introduce him, because Scott brought Philip to the band. He's got not just the good guitar skills, but is amazing on violin.
Okay, yeah. Where do you know him from, Scott?
I met, well, Phil and I kind of knew each other. We were in kind of neighboring touring bands, and then he played in Cornmeal for a few years when I played in Cornmeal. And I jump at any chance I can recommend him or work with him. He's a very fine musician, a lovely human being, and is always, like, uber prepared, keeps you on your toes. Like, you have to show up prepared, otherwise Phil will know you're not prepared.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and in a program like this, Lindsay will be the first to tell you, you have to really buckle down and do the work. Like, it's you're doing, as he said, it's a one-off show, so when you have limited rehearsal time, you really have to come in strong with the material so that the band can start to gel. And Phil is a guy who constantly amazes me by the amount of time that he takes to learn music and the nuance that he has and understanding that he has with dynamics and stuff. It's a ball having him on the show.
That's great. That's great.
Part of what it is that we are music fans too. I mean, we're fans of this music that we're playing. You know, this isn't a wedding band where you got to pick things that, you know, the mother of the bride wants to hear, that kind of stuff. It's like, we dug this album many years ago, and here's a chance to do some things with it that we never thought we'd get a chance to do. Philip, for example, as I said, plays violin. There's a couple of songs, well, like Kashmir.
Yeah.
Has a mellotron, has an electronic string-sounding keyboard that John Paul Jones played in the original recording. But I said to Philip, why don't you put your violin on some of that stuff? And he did, and it's just amazing.
That's great. And then who's on drums?
None on drums, a guy by the name of Jonathan Reed, who was part of our Jimi Hendrix show, and just an amazing drummer. I mean, so versatile, so skilled. I mean, this interview is all superlatives tonight, but I don't know what to say. These guys blow me away. I mean, every single musician on that stage just blows me away.
Yeah.
This year, I've just worked with some really cool people and very talented people, and people that take it very seriously, and I really appreciate that.
That's great. Okay, Lindsay and Scott, hang on, okay, guys?
Yes, sir.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about Physical Graffiti, the album, the legendary album by Led Zeppelin. It's a double album, and they are going to be playing it. Great Moments in Vinyl will be playing it and telling stories. And again, these guys are unbelievable live. If you've never seen Great Moments in Vinyl live, like we've been talking about, Lindsay gets incredible musicians, and they do an incredible job. So if you like Zeppelin, if you like Physical Graffiti, you should head out on Saturday night to Martyrs to see it. And when we come back, we'll talk about the album, we'll talk about the gig, and much more right here on 720 WGN. Right. That's Great Moments in Vinyl performing Custard Pie from Physical Graffiti, and you can see them perform that live, hear all kinds of cool stories, watch some incredible musicians. It's a unique concert experience. The band tells you the story before they play the song, and it's this Saturday, paying tribute to Led Zeppelin's Physical Graffiti at Martyrs, 3855 North Lincoln Avenue. GreatMomentsInVinyl.com for more information. We have a link on our Facebook page at Facebook.com. Joining us, Lindsay Cochran, the guy who organizes each gig for Great Moments in Vinyl, and guitarist Scott Tipping, who is part of the group for this Saturday's performance of Led Zeppelin. Lindsay and Scott, welcome back, guys.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for playing Custard Pie. It's like, I always like to think of it as one of their 8,000 songs about sex.
Yeah, 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 yeah. And also one of their many songs where the time signature is really weird.
It's got some nice syncopation to it. Oh, my God, talk about weird time signatures. We were just wrestling with the song that closes out Physical Graffiti tonight.
Yeah. I got to tell you that it's, you know, Physical Graffiti is a you know, I love my personal favorite, and it's my personal favorite is Zeppelin 2. because it's the earliest one that I remember playing. But, you know, like, I was about five, Scott, like you, when I was listening to Zeppelin too, because, you know, and, you know, that one stays with me, but... But for sheer quantity, and you got to go with Physical Graffiti. One, my friend always says Physical Graffiti is their best album because you get more Zeppelin for your money.
That's nice.
Yeah, and I have to say this: the first thing that I did when I went to New York as an adult, not as a kid, but the first thing that I did when I went to New York is I went to the building that's on the cover of the record, and I got my picture taken in front of it because I'm a geek.
St. Mark's Place? Awesome. Is that what it is?
Yeah, that's where it is, yes.
Oh, my gosh. Cool.
You know what? I mean, you know the other tidbit of information about that building, Lindsay?
What?
That's the building that's used in the Waiting on a Friend video with the Stones.
Oh, right. I did run across that.
Yeah. Which I think, so that's a legendary rock and roll building right there. It's got a lot of history, man.
Right there in Greenwich Village.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember here's another thing. I went to go see, I was at, I want to say it was one of the Super Bowls of rock in the 70s at Soldier Field. And I think it was, it was Nugent and Skynyrd, 38 Special. Those were the headliners.
Mm-hmm.
And in between, it was like 150 degrees outside. And in between, Physical Graffiti had just come out. And in between bands, you know, they play music in between bands. And I remember they played Kashmir, and the place erupted with more applause than they did for Nugent or for Skynyrd. Just for playing over the PA, they played Kashmir, and everybody went nuts.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, and I was lucky enough, Lindsay, you know this. Scott, I was lucky enough to have seen Zeppelin twice. I saw them.
Wow.
I saw them in 75, and I saw them in 77. And in 75, they were great. In 77, they were terrible because they were completely wasted the night I saw them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not a great tour, the 77 tour.
Did you tell me the story about the 77 tour? I mean, it was like Jimmy Page sitting in a chair?
He was on a folding chair for most of the show because he was so wasted. Yeah. I mean, the only person on stage that was sober was John Paul Jones, and you could tell he wasn't having it. He was not pleased. So.
Yeah. I think by the 77 tour, there's interviews with Jimmy Page where he basically said that he had stopped eating food and that he was just putting protein packs in daiquiris, and that was his nutrition.
Man, oh man. I mean, unbelievable. You know, you read Hammer of the Gods, you don't think that stuff is true, but wow. All right, Lindsay, tell us some stuff about Physical Graffiti, some of the little tidbits that you discovered.
Well, it was a crazy time for Zeppelin. You know, they were very successful. I think it was like $4 million they made on the preceding year's tour. I mean, that's incredible money for 1973.
Yeah.
And part of the Led Zeppelin legend is the destruction that they would wreak upon hotel rooms while they're on tour. John Bonham used a katana to turn John Paul Jones's room into kindling on one famous occasion, and that got the group forever banned from ever staying in a Hilton hotel again. Then there were the lampstands and other items that were frequently sent sailing out of the band's upper-story windows at the hotels. On one occasion, when Zeppelin's manager Peter Grant was settling up the bill for a hotel stay, and that meant paying for the TV sets that they had demolished, the hotel manager wistfully commented that he'd always wondered what it would be like to throw a television out the window. Peter Grant peeled off an extra $500 and gave it to the man and said, "Have one on me." It was a crazy time.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you, they were a crazy band, a crazy time, especially at in this period, Lindsay. And when you have a manager like Peter Grant, the stories behind that guy, unbelievable.
Well, because he was like 6'4" and a former wrestler and didn't mind using his physical presence to intimidate people.
Yeah.
To get his way.
Yeah. Absolutely. Do you have Scott? Is there a favorite song on Physical Graffiti that stands out for you?
Oh, you know what? I think I have to go by side. I think that side three of Physical Graffiti is one of the most epic sides in rock and roll history. I mean, I love the album cover to cover. I had the first Zeppelin records that my dad gave me were 2 and 4.
Yeah.
And then there was a neighbor down the street who was a few years older than me, Darren Meyer, and he loaned me Physical Graffiti. And I just remember being like, what is this? You know, but side three in particular, you know, the thing about Physical Graffiti that is beautiful in a musical sense, but even from a guitar nerd sense, is that album, Jimmy Page just ran away with guitar orchestrations. And if you listen to, like, In the Light or 10 Years Gone, the guitars that are in there, there's tons of guitars with all these intricate harmonies. And the way that they took the care to make the mix. You know, it doesn't sound busy, but it's incredibly busy and beautiful. Like, that's one of the things that I really love about the record, is that there's just so many, he put so much time into the, what he calls the orchestrations
yeah.
of everything.
Yeah.
And side three again, man. I mean, I don't know any side of any album that opens up with that drone and the light, and it just really, it takes you on an adventure.
10 Years Gone is my favorite song on the album.
It's a great song.
It's an amazing song. And it's an amazing song on an album full of amazing songs. A lot of times, you know, when you, back in the 70s, when bands would release a double album that wasn't live and it was just a studio album, there'd be some filler. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
You'd be, man, some of these songs, they could have cut this, you know, this could have, it would have been better as a single album. That's not the case mm-hmm. with Physical Graffiti. That is not the case at all, because pretty much every song is a gem on that record. And I also love the fact that there's a song called Houses of the Holy on it, and it's not on the album Houses of the Holy.
I know. Yeah, Page, when they did the remasters, Jimmy Page said that Physical Graffiti, he felt like, is when the band had their swagger, or started to get their swagger. And it's true, there's a confidence and kind of outer worldly energy where, you know, they knew their power, but they weren't abusing maybe they were abusing their bodies physically, but they weren't abusing their power for bad. Like, they were utilizing what they could in the studio in songwriting and stuff like that to create various things. I could go through everything, but another one that always stands out to me, because I can remember the first moment I heard it, is The Rover. Rover to me is just an incredible song.
Great song. In my time of dying, unbelievable.
Oh, yeah.
And this is the album, and Lindsay, I think you would agree with me on this, not only because people knew the prowess of Jimmy Page on guitar, and they knew that he worked in the studio, but I think this is like Page's production masterpiece. Would you guys agree
with
that?
Yeah. Like Scott was saying, with the orchestration of the guitars, and the band had hit its stride, kind of knew what it could do, and yet, as Robert Plant would tell you, it was all about continuing that experimentation, not being content to just release versions of Whole Lotta Love over and over again,
right.
But to carry it forward and to explore new things.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and Lindsay brought up today at the rehearsal, which I thought was a really interesting viewpoint, it's specifically within My Time of Dying, is that, you know, they were a British band that started very blues-based, you know, American blues-based and kind of folk stuff. And then when you get to In My Time of Dying, obviously that's based off an old tune, but like Lindsay pointed out, it's like, it's this blues thing, and then all of a sudden it's got like almost this weird prog rock stuff
yeah.
in the middle.
They
were really experimenting with what they could do with the form of blues at that point.
Yeah, absolutely. And that, you know, I mean, I love the background of Zeppelin a lot, but it kind of, you know, like, one of the things that drove me nuts about Zeppelin was how they would take credit for songwriting for songs that they didn't, that they clearly did not write. But
the Swan Song logo, you know, the looks like Icarus there with the angel wings and the head thrown back, the Roger Daltrey hair kind of stuff. But, I mean, that's a lift from a 19th century painting.
Yeah.
There's a 19th century artist, an American artist, had drawn this thing. Maybe it's the god Apollo because it's got the sun behind his head. But they just took that and redrew it to make the Swan Song logo.
Yeah. Well, they, you know, and again, I'm not, that's not to, you know, I mean, look, they were inspired by great American blues and rock and roll. There's no question about it. It's just that they took a little too much credit at one point. Well, they had to pay some royalties to some of the estates of the old blues guys, right?
Yeah,
it's kind
absolutely.
Of funny. That's the song "Boogie with Stew." I think that's the one that's kind of based on a Ritchie Valens tune.
Mm-hmm.
And so they credited Mrs. Valens as one of the songwriters, so she'd share in the royalties. But apparently, partly thinking they recognized that fact and they were trying to do the right thing, but still, the Valens estate sued them.
Wow, I didn't know about that one.
I mean, I guess it was the sort of thing that they realized that she did not get any of the money after Ritchie had died. There was no, she wasn't allowed access to any of the money from the estate.
I didn't know that.
So they wanted to put some in her pocket, and still the estate went after her.
I did.
Or after them.
I did not know that. I knew about the classic old blues guys, and their families went after them, and they did have to pay, and justifiably so.
Oh, yeah. You know, the only thing that I would say, and I'm not defending it, because personally, I think if you get turned on by a musician and you cover something that is derived from them, you should give them credit, you know? Like,
yeah.
So I'm not trying to fully defend what they did at all. But I guess the thing that somebody, I'm kind of a blues nut, and if you go through early blues recordings, there's a hell of a lot of music that's a lot similar properties and similar things where somebody changed a riff and all of a sudden so-and-so wrote it, you know? And they were really basing that off a tradition. The difference was they made a hell of a lot of money.
That's the thing. Scott, I know that was happening all the time. Riffs would get changed by one little lick and that's it. And suddenly it was rewritten. And I know that was a tradition that they were upholding. It's just that, you know, once you get to the point where you're making billions of dollars on it.
Oh, yeah. You can give Muddy a little credit.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
All right. Lindsay, Scott, hang on. Okay, guys?
Yep.
We'll take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll talk more with Lindsay and Scott. And their gig is coming up this Saturday at Martyrs. And we'll take a quick break here and we'll talk more with Lindsay and Scott and more about Physical Graffiti and Led Zeppelin right after this on WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. That was Great Moments in Vinyl from their rehearsal. That's Black Dog. Black Dog, though, not on Physical Graffiti. But they're going to play. They're probably going to play a few other songs. But they will be featuring Physical Graffiti, the Led Zeppelin classic double Led Zeppelin album. And they'll be playing it Saturday at Martyrs on Lincoln Avenue. Check greatmomentsinvinyl.com for more. And we're here with Lindsay Cochran and Scott Tipping. Lindsay, welcome back.
Good morning.
And Scott, welcome back.
Hello.
All right. So you guys gonna do some cuts that are not on Physical Graffiti, then, I'm assuming, Lindsay.
Well, actually, the Black Dog, we definitely are. But Black Dog came from our Wire performance this last December.
Oh, okay.
When we were doing albums 3 and 4. But yeah, we've got a couple of surprises tucked away for the encores of our show Saturday night.
All right, great. Is there any other story that you want to share with us, Lindsay, about Zeppelin?
Well, we're talking about the crazy days of Led Zeppelin, but I think things were starting to catch up with the band. You know, it wasn't long after Physical Graffiti when Robert Plant had the car accident, and then sadly soon after that his son died, and then we know what happened to John Bonham as well. Zeppelin was starting to pay the price. Hard-working, hard-partying Jimmy Page, after that tour they had just won, he was malnourished, he was sleep-deprived, he was exhausted, and didn't help matters at the time that he was moving from cocaine to heroin. But John Paul Jones, who was informing their manager, Peter Grant, of his intentions to quit the band to spend more time with his family, and Robert Plant, during that tour that preceded Physical Graffiti, he had developed voice problems that necessitated surgery.
Mm.
He admitted in 1988 that he couldn't talk for 3 weeks. We never knew that back then.
Wow.
And then there was John Bonham. He was developing a split personality, fun and cuddly when he was sober and likely to become a raging lunatic when he was drunk. And in the book Hammer of the Gods that you mentioned, the publicist for that tour talks matter-of-factly about the experience. He says, "My take on this period was that it was sometimes boring. The band was tired. One of the stories that doesn't get told was how many times there weren't wild parties and how lonely and exhausted they would get and how they would be so worried about what they looked like in a picture and would their wives be mad at them."
Wow.
That's another side of the band you don't see.
Yeah, it is. You know what? I still have my tickets for the 1980 tour.
Wow.
Yeah, obviously they didn't, you know, because Bonham died,
mm-hmm.
I still have my tickets somewhere. They're in a folder somewhere. So,
put them on eBay.
Yeah, put them on eBay. No, I want to save them. Those are my Zeppelin tickets. I can't get rid of those.
There you go, man, yeah.
Well, they're never getting together again.
No, I know that. I realize that. It's amazing, how Plant's career continues to change and...
I cannot sum it up in this interview right now, but there's a great article in Forbes that came out about a week ago, less than a week ago,
mm-hmm.
talking about how Robert Plant, how he epitomizes what leaders in industry should do. You know, you have your peak, and then you move on from that. You don't try to keep replicating it over and over and over again. Robert Plant just presents this classic example of how to age gracefully. Maybe that's a good way of putting it.
Yeah. Well, the first, you know, the first couple of Plant albums were Zeppelin. Well, the first one, the first Plant solo album sounded like Zeppelin. And but the second one drifted off a little bit more. But when he by the time he was doing the Honey Drippers, you know, and what he's been doing the past 10, 15 years is so different from Zeppelin and so experimental and so amazing. And he's still got the chops, too, man. It's amazing to watch what this guy's career continues to be.
He likes to explore. He likes to just try things out. And, you know, he comes to parts of America or goes to Morocco or whatever and just hangs with the musicians there and listens and learns and gets ideas.
Yeah. Lindsay, what are some of the more challenging songs on Physical that you guys are talking about?
Well, Scott named several of them already. In the Light is interesting. In My Time of Dying. I mean, just anything where they develop the idea over 8, 9, 10 minutes, you know. And,
yeah.
And someone mentioned the odd time signatures. There are changes where the beat just seems to stutter. You know, there's a little half a beat thrown in there.
Yeah, yeah. Zeppelin did that a lot. And I mean, we just played a bit from Black Dog. There's another one that's time signature goes crazy.
Get that weird little riff change.
Yeah.
It has parts where it hiccups, if you will. And in some ways, you almost have to feel it rather than count it out. You have to have a we do Sick Again, which is at the end of Physical Graffiti.
Yeah.
There's a riff, and then you just have to say reset, you know, and then, okay, beat one is over here now.
Yeah. Scott, the bands that you've been with and stuff like that, do you enjoy, you know, I know you enjoy, obviously you enjoy playing out and gigging. Do you enjoy the studio aspect as well?
Oh, I love getting to do that. I don't get to do it as much as I like to, but, you know, last year I had two really cool records come out that I was very proud of. This year it looks like I'm on one or two other things. The studio is a beautiful place, you know, in the right environment and with the right people. And I've been fortunate that I'm usually in the right environment with the right people.
Yeah. Well, that's great, man. All right. I always ask musicians this question when they first come on my show. And I ask two questions. And here's the first one. And Lindsay, we've already asked you this, but you can answer them again. Let's start with Lindsay, and then we'll go to Scott. Lindsay, what was the first album you ever bought?
I think it was Mungo Jerry.
Right.
I liked the song In the Summertime, and it was an interesting experience. It was my first time getting an album and first time learning that not every song in the album was worth having.
That's true. Scott, first album you ever bought?
The Beatles' second album, the American pressing, Beatles' second album.
Okay, all right. Lindsay, first concert?
Chicago.
Yep.
Because I played trombone when I was in high school, so I loved a band that had a horn section, and I think it was the tour for Chicago 5.
There you go. And Scott, what about you, first concert?
Well, I'm kind of cheating because I went to a couple of concerts early on that I don't really remember, where I was like in kindergarten and I maybe was there but didn't pay attention, or I was too young to kind of remember the event. But so really my first concert experience was, my parents took me 7th grade. I had second row seats at Poplar Creek to see the Greg Allman Band open for Stevie Ray Vaughan and Double Trouble.
Oh, man.
Wow. Yeah.
That's good. Man, that's good. I saw.
Oh, my God.
I got to see Stevie Ray Vaughan. I was lucky enough to see Stevie Ray Vaughan twice. I saw him at the Holiday Star or the Star Plaza in Merrillville.
Yeah.
And I saw him at the Aragon, and that was one of the greatest shows I've ever seen.
Hey, Scott, had you discovered the guitar at that point?
Yes, I had. You know, and actually, what was interesting about Stevie, I got to see Stevie 3 times.
Yeah.
And the first time, my mom had to take me. My dad and I were set to go, and we were guitar nerds. And my mom used to get tired of hearing us labor over riffs and stuff. And she's like, okay, I guess I'll go. And as soon as that man came on the stage, she became an immediate fan.
Of course.
You couldn't not love his presence and the love that he had for music.
No question about it. One of the best shows I've ever seen was that show at the Aragon. One of the best I've ever seen.
I believe it.
Yeah, true. Incredible. Listen, great talking with you guys. Lindsay, always a pleasure. Scott, real fun to meeting you, man.
Hey, yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Nick, I have one final quote for you.
Yeah, please.
You're a Steve Earle fan. Here's what he had to say about Led Zeppelin.
Okay.
Led Zeppelin, they were heavily rooted in stuff that always push buttons that people who are into music have.
There you go. The great Steve Earle. That's very cool. Lindsay, Scott, thank you guys. Have a great gig on Saturday, and I appreciate you hanging out with us.
Thanks, man. Have a great show.
All right, guys, take care. There you go. There's Lindsey Cochran and Scott Tipping. You can see them perform Led Zeppelin's Physical Graffiti and a little more surprises. All right, we'll take a break. We got the news coming up next on 720 WGN.